Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 148 of Ally Strategies. My name is Tristan. Joining me, as always, is my friend Neil.
Hello.
And not joining us this week is our friend Benjamin, because this week is the Pro Tour. And Ben is qualified for the Pro Tour, as are you, Neil. Is that not correct?
Oh, yeah. We definitely both are, and this just goes to show, you know, the dedication to the show.
Right, yeah.
One of us is here, you know, spending very valuable, you know, a few days before the Pro Tour testing time, just sharing his secrets, and one of them is just, you know, not dedicated to the podcast, so.
Busy hanging out with his friends, people who do other podcasts, you know.
Jeez.
Yeah, I can't believe him sometimes.
He's probably just eating ice cream right now. I'm pretty jealous, actually.
Would not be surprised.
But, like, if you don't know, like, when you travel to these Pro Tours, like, basically just eat a lot of ice cream. You play some magic, but it's mostly just to go and eat ice cream.
Yeah, Ben loves to travel the world and eat at a Subway in every different city. but yeah, so this week our main topic is going to be, we're going to talk with Neil about your testing for the Pro Tour. And then next week when we get Ben back, we'll talk maybe more about a post-mortem of the Pro Tour. Hopefully that'll be, you know, our great big episode where we get all a load of new listeners because you guys both make top four or whatever. And
that'd be great.
If both of you on different teams promote the same podcast, it would just be so wonderful. But more realistically, we'll probably be, Peach Garden Oath and one other good team. And I don't know. I guess probably just four great teams are going to make top four. And so you're probably pretty cold, Neil.
Eh, maybe, maybe not.
Although
my teammates say they like their decks.
Yeah, I've heard from you before we started recording that your deck is broken, so we'll get to that later. Who is your team, by the way?
It's Alec Majlaton, and he's going to play Blue Eye Control in Modern. He's cool. Feeling like it's great. He was going to play that or KCI. He felt like KCI, he couldn't play 100%, and it's probably has a target on it. And he thought Blue Eye was good, so I was like, that's cool. And then his buddy, who I don't know personally, but I'll meet up in a couple days here, is Jonathan Morawski. He's this like East Coast legacy guru person, so hopefully he just wins all his matches. That's what I'm counting on. He's going to play Sneak and Show.
Yeah, East Coast is definitely the coast to be if you're a legacy guru, because you got all those Star City tournaments to play.
Yeah, so I think I've got a pretty good squad. We all feel pretty good about our decks, and we're all playing Islands, so, I mean, can we lose? Probably not.
Yeah, for the 25th anniversary Pro Tour, you'd really hope that Islands take it down in all three slots, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You just get extra good luck if you do that, right?
Yeah, hopefully. Are you guys all synchronized basic land art, or are you on different plans?
Haven't figured that part out yet. Maybe that'll be, See, these days you have to lock in your list on Wednesday, and then Thursday is sort of like the registration day, kind of just like de-stress a little bit, you don't have to worry about it, and then Friday you play. So maybe that's like a Thursday topic.
Yeah.
Like, what basic lands are we going to play?
Thursday is it's either a de-stress day or it's a very stressed day when you're trying to pick up the cards that you don't have to make your 75.
It's going to be a little stressful for me, but part of the nice thing about this team structure is that I was like, I am missing most of this deck. Do you guys have some of these cards? And my teammates are like, oh, yeah, we have most of those. Whereas normally, like, if you're testing with people, a lot of you are on the same deck, because you presumably think that deck's pretty good. And they're obviously not standard, so I just get to borrow their cards. It's great.
that is a cool upside to this format. So we're going to talk...
I'm letting my legacy teammate borrow Sneak Attack, so really just everyone's happy.
Yeah, it's great. So that is actually... We'll talk about that next week, I think, the kind of the team format and the testing intricacies, the idiosyncrasies, rather, of this particular Pro Tour. That'll be episode 149, and then next week after that, so in 2 weeks, we'll have episode 150, which is going to be our mailbag episode. So listeners, you know,
mailbag.
If you have any questions you'd like to ask future Pro Tour champion, past Grand Prix champion Neil Oliver, or Pro Tour runner-up Ben Weitz, future Pro Tour runner-up, hopefully, then, you know, go ahead and send those in. We accept questions of all kinds, you know, super troll questions. We might only read a couple of those if we get too many, but non-troll questions, medium troll questions, questions about, direct magic scenarios or indirect magic scenarios, things surrounding the game, anything like that, go ahead and send them in. You know, send them to us on Twitter at Allied Strats. That's the best place where we'll aggregate them from pretty much anywhere we can, though. Or you can mail them to Ben if you can get his address. Many have tried, and you can send him a letter, although the time is closing for getting that to arrive before episode 150. Anyways, let's move on now to thanking our good friends of the podcast over on Patreon.com. Adam, Matt, Sean, Brett, Britton, Kyle, Caroline, and Eric. Thank you for your continued support, and we hope that you in particular enjoy this episode of us talking to Neil about the Pro Tour. But first, before we get to that substantive content, we have to do our favorite segment that we have to do, called Card of the Week. And yeah, for 148 episodes now, I've tried to get Card of the Week out of the show, but alas. So I guess I'll start off since Ben's
here.
My Card of the Week is Damping Sphere. So Damping Sphere is 2 mana for an artifact. And it says if a land would tap for, like, 2 or more colors, it only taps for a single colorless. And also, each spell costs 1 more for each spell that person's cast this turn.
Mm-hmm.
And this card is a powerful piece of, you know, hate technology in Modern. It's got good game against Tron and Storm. It's got a medium amount of game against KCI, perhaps less than you'd expect. Which, if you want to hear more about that, you can listen to some of our episodes about KCI, where Ben explains why the card is not necessarily the scourge of the deck that it may look. But the reason I want to talk about this card is because I actually won a game with Damping Sphere last week when I played some Modern in my local game store. I got inspired by an article by Sean McLaren on MassDrop.com, where I think Ben is sponsored by those guys as well. So they have some great articles up there, and I read this article about Jeskai Control, and just the combination of Teferi and then a bunch of 2-mana counterspells like Remand and Logic Knot to have held up after activating Teferi really excited me about doing that in Modern. So I sleeved up the deck.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's really nice. And the kind of that, the, you know, Remands have not really been in favor in traditional control decks for a long time because that, you know, they just don't accomplish much. Like, you don't get much out of trading up on mana against people because they're going to just play their cards anyway, and so if they're important, you need to have a hard counter for them. Just buying a turn doesn't really help, usually. But that's not true when you have Teferi, obviously, because Teferi, if you can just defend Teferi one turn and then you untap, you've got 7 extra cards now, and you know, Teferi's got enough loyalty that you can maybe minus it the next turn if the important things are permanent.
How do they print that card, by the way?
Yeah,
it is so miserable.
It's unclear. But anyway, so my card of the week, Damping Sphere, I won a game with this card against Bloom Titan. So what I did is I boarded it in against Bloom Titan because I was like, okay, they've got all these crews. And then I didn't draw it in game 2, and I lost. And I was like, you know, this sucks. But I didn't draw any of my Damping Spheres. And I'd noticed that my opponent had always prioritized returning his forests and gemstone mines and stuff to his hand with his crews, which makes sense, right? Like, you'd want to get those off the battlefield. But I noticed when I was looking at the game state before I conceded at the end of game 2 that he did not have enough non-Karoo sources of green or blue to pay for any pacts that he may have cast.
Oh my goodness.
Kept my Damping Spheres in, and then in game 3, I could have played a Damping Sphere on turn 2, and it would have hindered his mana development, but then he would have killed it with a Reclamation Sage on, like, turn 10, and I would have lost. But instead, the game kind of dragged on to turn 20, and eventually I got him in this spot where he played Summoner's Pact, and I had a position where I had 6 mana, so I could go Damping Sphere, and I also had a Remand in my hand, so even if he had a Pact of Negation, I could Remand my own Damping Sphere and then replay it, and just checkmate him so that he couldn't pay the 2GG for Summoner's Pact next turn. So I did that, I played Damping Sphere, and he extended the hand, that was the end of the game, so it was such
awesome.
A delight. Yeah, it was engineered. It was one of the best, you know, feelings I've had winning a game of Magic in a long time, because I felt so smart. So that's my card of the week, Damping Sphere. You know, it's got some clearly good applications, but also you can just use it to kill people by making them unable to pay for Summoner's Pact. Neil, what is your card of the week?
My card of the week is Llanowar Elves. Single green mana for a 1/1. It taps to add a green mana to your mana pool.
That's not a card we've talked about on this podcast before, yeah, so if you have to look it up, listeners, you know, I'd understand.
So we're going to talk a lot about Standard today, and sometimes, you know, card of the week, we pick cards for all sorts of reasons, but we also sometimes pick cards just because we want to rant about them. And I just want to complain about Llanowar Elves and just one mana elves in Standard in general. In terms of, like, the modern era of design, I'm fine with these cards existing, but there needs to be, like, context. And, like, the card can't be too good, because if it's too good and, like, ramps you into things that are relevant too quickly, then there's just, like, a lot more non-games. And so this standard's answer to, like, well, Land of Morales is not too good. You know, Goblin Chain Whirler exists. That'll keep it in check, right? Well, one, Goblin Chain Whirler is stupid. But that's not really a reasonable answer because, you know, they don't always have a Chain Whirler really fast. Not everyone plays Chain Whirler. You have to, like, make sure you can interact with their Land of Morales fast enough or like, be able to answer all the expensive cards in a timely manner, which is pretty tough. But anyways, Land of Morales is dumb, and it's especially dumb because they printed a 5/4 for 3 mana that can't be blocked, basically. And games where your opponent doesn't have Land of Morales on turn 1 when they're playing mono green are just so much easier to win than games where they have turn 1 Land of Morales. So I just think, like, that level of variance introduced in a single card is just not really very interesting. So, I don't know. Just a little rant aside.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
When it's, yeah, just one copy, so 4 copies in your 60, and it's just the games are so different based on whether or not you draw it, it's... I agree that it's just not a good place to put the variance in the game.
That or you just can't have really good 3 drops that it can ramp into.
Yeah, and I thought that was maybe what they were going to go for when they spoiled Land of Morales, but then they spoiled Steel Leaf Champion 2 days later or whatever, and...
Yeah, even without it, I'd still be a little bit annoyed, because, like, there are still really good 3 drops to ramp into, namely Ronus, because if you can ramp Ronus into...
Yeah, Ronus is anything, a lot less good without Steel Leaf Champion, although with Vine Marinade.
But exactly, the fact that you have just both of these cards is just so ridiculous, mm-hmm. And then these cards are enormous, so then you just get to put a Galta into play in, like, turn 3 or 4, you know? I don't know. It's just, probably not turn 3, but...
Yeah.
Turn 4 Galta is just also disgusting.
I have cast a turn three Galta in a RPTQ. It was pretty great. I did lose the next game though to turn 3 Galta, so that was unfortunate. It was really unlucky when it happened to me, but it was really skillful when I did it.
It's away. Very very skill testing.
But I've always enjoyed Llanowar Elves being in standard and Elvish Mystic being in standard, mostly because that just means I play the green decks for the duration of their existence in standard.
Yeah, I've played the green decks too, and I think they're really good right now, and we will talk about all that more. But I just, it's not even the matter of goodness. It's just, like, so much of your win percent is wrapped up in whether or not you have this card on turn one.
Yes,
it's so stupid.
I think it's stupid, and, you know, I wish they didn't do it. But on the other hand, I also really enjoy casting Land of Elves. Like, I mean, it's yeah. I hate myself
it does
for loving
sell
it
packs,
so much.
I think, so they're pretty smart.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our main topic this week, which is, of course, your Pro Tour testing process. So let's begin, as they say, at the beginning, which is, when did you start testing for this Pro Tour in earnest, Neil?
It's hard for me to think exactly, just because my life has been a haze the last, like, 2 weeks or so, which is probably when it started, because ever since I started testing, like, I have just a million big projects I'm working on, one of which is the PT. Like, I've a ton of things going on right now, but that said, I want to do well at the PT, so and I really want to, like, not let my teammates down, you know, so I made sure that I tested a lot on Moto, and so probably, like, two and a half weeks ago, I started playing at least maybe, like, a league a day, something like that. So I've been testing a lot.
All right, what deck would you like to first talk about? Like, where did you start with?
Sure. So, like, as soon as, like, there started being deck lists posted once M19 was online and people were playing the decks and the 5-0 dump or whatever every few days on the deck list of Magic Online, basically I just, like, looked at interesting decks, and if something looked appealing, powerful, or, like, unique enough or appeared often enough, I figured I would just give it a try. So one of the very first deck I tested was, like, this Sarkhan's Unsealing deck, which was, like, pretty sweet. It plays Land of War Elves, first of all, which is always great.
Oh, is it a Traxos deck as well?
Yeah. The idea is, like, you play Sarkhan's Unsealing, and then you just have a ton of creatures with 4 or more power that trigger it, including such hits as, like, Traxos, which you have a lot of historic cards to untap it. And then like Carnage Tyrant, you just like you just play like really really big threats and just wipe your opponent's board, and that all sounds great, but it turns out the deck is like really really awkward because if you're playing like a green mirror, your opponents have cards like Ronus and Heart of Curon and Galta, so if they have these cards in play, like it's great to deal 4 damage, but doesn't really do a lot sometimes. And then, like, it was, like, kind of slow because you're playing all this clunky stuff, so it's bad against the red decks and also bad against, like, the slower decks of the format. So, like, while the deck seemed cool, it just was actively horrible.
Yeah, but both red and green have these threats that, like, are both evasive and unkillable. Uh-huh. So it's like, okay, yeah, you know, Galta has Trample and 12 Toughness. Ronus gives Trample and has Indestructible. Heart of Cairn's not a creature on your turn and has Flying.
Right. Yeah, Vehicles Hazard is definitely
Indestructible.
Uh-huh.
You know, Rekindling Phoenix doesn't die unless you hit it twice, and it's also flying, so it's just, you know, none of your game plan is just invalidated on both ends, which is
I can imagine
really
a format where this is just the best deck. It's just the metagame so bad for it.
It seems like this would be good against somebody who's like, you know, I play Knight of Grace.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, I did destroy some white-black players, because that was like the like new deck. At the very start, everyone's like Ajani's and like all these knights and like History of Benalia's, and that deck's kind of cool. But
yeah, that deck's like, I don't think that two deck's... 4/4s, and you're like,
I don't
okay,
think that deck's
killed
either.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so that's where I started. A kind of cool deck. Going along that trajectory, some other 5-0 decks I tried. At first, I just thought the deck looked like a joke. Have you heard of the Cat deck?
Is this like a green white Pride Sovereign Unclaimed Territory deck?
Yeah, it literally just plays all cats.
Right, so you've got, like, Leonin Warleader, Regal Caracal.
Yeah, a Johnny's Pride made super busting in it because you have
you play the one
cats.
Drop?
You have 4 Sacred Cats and 4 of the new M19 cat.
Leonin Vanguard.
If you have 3 or more, you gain a life during your combat. So, like, you can really curve out on people. Like, you play Sacred Cat turn 1, turn 2, you know, Johnny's Pride mate, it becomes a 3-3. You know, turn 3... you could play some more
Vanguard.
Life-gaining creatures,
yeah.
Or you play, like, the Pride Sovereign, or, you know, you remove their blocker. There's, like, a bunch of kind of cool things you can do. And then your creatures just get enormous, because you just have, like, I don't know, 10 lords or something. It's kind of like zombies right now, although it doesn't have as many lords as zombies, but that's the idea. It's, like, everything just pumps everything else, but there's more synergy than the zombie decks. So I was like, oh, well, more synergy and you get a lot of lords? That seems kind of cool. The downside is you just have to play these horrible one drops. And I was like, if this deck is good enough where it can overcome the fact that Chain Ruler just wipes half your creatures, then, you know, that means the deck's probably worth trying. The very first round I played against Mono Red, and, like, I got 3-for-1 on, like, the first game. And I was like, this deck's kind of bad.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's not enough ways to, like, really overcome that. It's, you're trying to synergize with a bunch of creatures, but you're also trying to make sure you have enough spots for, like, removal, and it's just, like, super awkward.
It would be a bold strategy to, like, bet on Mono Red not being well represented at the Pro Tour, because it's...
Yeah.
The deck has just, like, been dominating for so long that I'm sure that there are going to be a lot of players that just sleeve up red, black, or whatever, and...
Right. I mean, also with these core sets, historically, if you look at these core sets, you have to look a while back, because they just came back, but... The top performing decks usually aren't anything new, because the core sets usually just, like, amplify strategies. Like, you look at these mono red decks and you're like, well, we're definitely not losing anything, and then are we really adding anything? You know, not a ton or whatever, but what else is everyone else gaining? Most of the core set cards are like, there's a few that can impact standard, but not that many.
Right, and there certainly aren't. You know, kind of in normal sets, they usually print cards that are like hooks for new decks or for, you know.
Yeah, they don't print those really.
Like cards like Teferi or Chain Whirler or Hazoret that are like, hey, build a deck around me, or the Scarab God. But you don't. Yeah, I mean, this core set kind of has that with Nicol Bolas. I'd say that's the closest to that.
Yeah,
that you see here.
That spawned a new deck for sure. And there are like. We built a Dragons deck, like the Sarkhan deck, which is kind of cool. I've actually played any games with it, but I played against a Sarkhan deck literally today, and it was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
so.
I've seen some cool versions that are like discarding Scrap Heap Scrounger as well. That's pretty nifty.
You see cards like the Volley Veteran, that Goblin, You always have to check, because like if there's like, is that enough to now push it over the edge type thing, and so you always have to consider that. And in that case, I just don't think there's enough goblins in standard. But
yeah,
and also Hazoret's just too good. But like, these are the types of things you consider. You're not really, there's not too many things that totally build new decks.
Yeah, and
there are a few, we'll talk about it.
This is probably a core set that's landed among the highest core sets in terms of impacting standard.
I think we will see new decks that we didn't see beforehand. But you're still just going to see, you know, the top decks.
Right. Okay, so yeah, Cats didn't work out because red is too bad for it. Red-Green Unsealing didn't work out because green and red were both too bad for it. Do you try any other cool decks maybe from that 5-0 deck dump?
Yeah, so the last one I tried that looked actually pretty appealing was this, like, Grixis Burn deck, which was really cool.
Oh, yeah, it's so cool. I've seen this. It's so nice.
So basically the plan is you just, like, you disrupt your opponent by just killing their stuff throughout the game, and you have some, you basically just interact with their cards for as long as you can to just stay alive. And then the moment you have a clearing, you just land Moroi's Conjecture. And from there, you basically set up a Lightning Strike and an Insult to Injury off of it. And then on the third turn, you cast Insult, which gets copied. So now all your spells deal 4x damage. Mm-hmm. And then you cast Lightning Strike.
Which
so Lightning
copied.
Strike times 4 is 12.
Yeah.
And then it gets copied, so it's 24 damage. So that is just like, that combo will just kill people on the third turn. One turn kill.
On the third turn of the Moroi Conjecture.
Yeah.
Trigger.
Yeah. But it pulls back both pieces if you already needed to like ditch them or whatever. And then other than that, like, you're just kind of playing a lot of removal spells, and it's a pretty normal deck. So that looked really appealing. It attacks from a really unique angle, and I was like, you know, maybe there's something here. And I played some games with this deck, and actually it was pretty good. I was surprised with how powerful it was. If people didn't realize quite what was going on, then like, they just weren't quite ready to die yet, you know? That was great. Obviously, like, people at the Pro Tour would be able to figure this out, or maybe have seen it, but it wasn't like one of those kind of halfway known decks. It seemed like pretty obscure. So I was like, okay, that has it going for it. Like, there's some surprise value. Maybe you can get some free wins. The problem with the deck is it's really bad when you don't draw Moroi's Conjecture. Like, you just have all these one-for-ones, and you have a lot of cycling lands, so flooding isn't quite as bad, and you play cards like Cathartic Reunion to just filter through when you draw bad cards. But, like, you have to kill everything, because you don't have creatures to interact with your opponent, because you're just trying to play all spells.
Right,
so,
you're playing neither creatures nor sweepers is kind of the rough part, right?
Yeah, and there are some sweepers, and you can play some. Like, I even tried it with some sweepers. But the problem is sweepers are just not great.
Right.
It's the same problem I was talking about with the Unsealing deck, right?
Where, yeah,
like,
you try and sweep
there. Or there are indestructible, or there are vehicles. So, like, you know, if they just have a Heart of Quran, like, your sweeper just kind of sucked. So I didn't really like the sweeper aspect. And if you can't line up all your threats the whole game perfectly into Moroi's Conjecture, it's kind of bad. And then on top of it, green is just playing main deck answers to enchantments, because thrashing bronze, so the deck I think is actually like pretty decent, but it just didn't quite work out.
Okay, yeah, that is a shame, because I've seen that deck and I thought it was a really cool premise.
It's very cool.
Yeah, I wonder if there's more room to innovate in that area. Like, maybe you touch white for Settle the Wreckage or something, or I don't know. It's tough to ditch black in the deck, right? Because black is like Vraska's Contempt and stuff are so integral to the strategy. But yeah, this is a really cool deck, and I would not be surprised to see, you know, as we continue, the Moroi Conjecture kind of at some point in the next, before it rotates out of standard, do something cool with that kind of combo.
Yeah, I like that the sagas are just so cool that do like really wonky things, so I'm glad they exist.
Yeah, that is certainly a delight. All right, so that's kind of the random decks you tried from the 5-0 deck dump. You weren't really happy with any of them. All of them were bad against some combination of green and red, which is just...
Yeah, I mean, the closest one was definitely the burn deck, but it's
right.
not good enough.
Yeah, and that does have a reasonable like game plan against green, as long as they don't have Thrashing Brontodon, which is not too bad of a place to be, but you're right, it's still...
Yeah, they also just have Blossoming Defense, which is a disaster.
Oh yeah, if they're playing like four in the main deck, which some people are, even if they're playing just two in the main deck, which is
really just any number that they play in a game is a problem.
Right. The first one is pretty likely to kill you, and the second one will 100% kill you. So
yeah,
that's
a problem.
That's rough. That's rough for sure. Especially even if they don't have it, if they just play around your cards with clever use of vehicles and Ronus and stuff, then that can be a problem too.
Right.
All
right,
let's move on then to... Did you try any of the kind of known-to-be-good decks
for your test? So, what's interesting is that all the stuff I was drawing was, like, from these 5-0 lists, and while I'm playing these decks, I was always playing these, like, competitive leagues, I played against the top decks basically just every single match. So, the three decks I played against the most would be, like, Grixis Midrange of various varieties, but these are, like, these bolus decks. There's, like, different versions that exist, actually quite a few, but the main ones that I was playing against was, like, more kind of mid-range control side, with the Scarab God and Liliana's and Bolas and just, like, you know, removal spells.
Liliana's so like pretty good. Very good combo.
Yeah, Liliana's really good in that deck. And then some of them were more energy-based, like they played Whirler Virtuoso, so that's kind of a slightly different version of the deck. Harness Lightnings are better there, that kind of thing. So, like, that has a different angle going for it, where it's more on the mid-range side, less controlling. And then there's, like, these aggro decks that are basically just red-black splash bolus. They're playing Chain Willers and Scrap Heap Scroungers and just, you know, Heart of Charons. It's just all the normal cards, and they're just splashing bolus. And that deck, I think, is just worse than red-black because it's trying too hard to play bolus, which is not that good in an aggro deck. But,
yeah, it's like the problem you're trying to solve with your red-black deck is that you need a better 4-drop. Like, have you looked at the 4-drops available?
Yeah, it makes really no sense.
On the other hand, the blue splash is, like, actually fairly free in that deck. Like, you really don't hurt your ability to cast Chain Whirler by more than a couple percentage points, I don't think.
Yeah, the main problem is you have to slow down.
Yeah.
And you don't really want that out of your red deck, so...
That's true.
If you're going to play a red-black deck, I recommend just playing red-black. And if you're going to play a Grixis deck... then that's fine. I think the Grixis midrange decks have a lot of good tools, but I think people weren't quite ready for it, because it's just this pile of good cards, and if you can interact favorably with their good cards by gaining mana advantages on them, because all their cards are kind of expensive, or just overloading their answers, because they don't actually, like, because they're a midrange deck, they're not really in the control department, so if you go way under... essentially, or just, like, play Haymaker after Haymaker, they don't really interact that well on that spot. Like, they're just trying to clog the game up and come up with, like, these powerful late-game threats, like Liliana, like Bolas, like the Scarab God. So that's kind of what that deck's trying to do. I don't think it's great.
Yeah, you can certainly, like, catch them in a spot where half their deck is bad, and once you power through the half that's good, you know, you can... get virtual card advantage against that style of deck pretty easily. All right, so did you end up playing any Grixis decks yourself, or did you just kind of dismiss that?
No, I felt like I had played against them a lot and just understood what they were trying to do and just didn't love it. No one on my team was, like, some people had played a little bit with it, and everyone was just having, like, middling results too, so I was like, I'm not going to waste my time on it.
Right, because, yeah, we'll talk more about it next week, but you are testing with other standard players. In this event, and so the Grixis is not a deck that you guys ended up liking. All right, tell me about then Red Black, which is, I know you cited it as a better version of Grixis aggro, so did you play any Red Black?
I didn't play any of the top decks outside of maybe kind of mono green, where I was playing, like, the Unsealing version, which gave me a taste of what green was trying to do, because it still played a lot of green cards. You're still playing, like, obviously Steel Leaf Paladin and was it Steel Leaf Champion?
Champion, yeah.
Steel Leaf, yeah. I was like, is it a Paladin? Anyways, he has a jousting glance. I don't know.
Paladins are usually at least a little bit white.
I know. That's why I was like, that sounds wrong. Uh-huh. Anyways, so still played a lot of the green cards. So I was like, okay, I kind of know what this deck's doing. And I, at this point, I've played against green so much that I just know it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Same with Red Black.
And your teammates that are testing both Red Black and Mono Green, right?
Yeah. I was kind of one of the brewers on the team. And so I was just trying a bunch of stuff while everyone else... Like, I always knew that if everything failed, I would just play one of these other decks.
Right, and
so I'm just letting them know what I'm working on, how it's going, giving up on certain things, etc.
Somebody on your team will develop a tuned list of red, black, and or mono green.
Yeah, I think almost everyone's playing mono green at the Pro Tour, so that just gives you an idea. Like, they were tuning that basically the whole time. I think it's very, very good. I think it's the best, you know, top deck. But anyways, red, black is a better version of, like, the Grixis Splash Bolas deck, I think, in terms of the aggro one we talked about. And I also think it's much better than just, like, straight mono red. You don't have a ton of incentive to be straight mono red. You gain a lot in terms of just adding the black splash. Scrap Heap Scrounger is just huge. Being able to return that is very, very good. And that's a very good aggressive creature. And I think Duress is a really good sideboard card these days. A lot of these decks are trying to take advantage of tempo it exchanges, like Essence Scatter, like cheap counters, or you nab their one key interactive like card. You against like a blue white deck, you know, you put pressure in play and then you Duress on the turn you're going to attack so that you can take away their Settle the Wreckage, these types of things. So like the black splash I think is quite good. Doomfall is quite good. And you just get all the aggressive cards. And we've just seen this mono red deck. This deck is mono red, be really good before, and it's still really, really strong. Like Chain Whirler is just so powerful. And then you get to play Chandra, and you get to play, you know, Glorybringers. You get to play these really powerful Haymakers post board. There's just, as you were saying, there's so many good fours. We've talked about it on the podcast again and again, but just having, you know, Hazoret, Chandra, Phoenix on four. These cards are all just insane. You also get access to Unlicensed Disintegration, which is one of the best tools against mono green. They invest a bunch of mana. Honestly, not that much because all the cards are just under cost in that deck, but they invest some good amount of mana and you gain a nice advantage on them.
They also invest extra cards in it, right? Because they're playing Llanowar Elves. So every time you remove one of their big threats, you're getting more advantage than usual against decks that invest in acceleration.
Right. They're kind of building their deck to take advantage of Galta, this type of stuff. Sometimes Ronus is a little bit dead if you can kill all the big stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. Particularly post-board with the red decks against green, if you can you can just strand any Galtas or Ronuses that they've kept in consistently.
If you can kill their couple big things and then the Chain Whirlers wipe up their, you know, Llanowar Elves, and then they kind of don't have enough mana to operate.
Yeah, once you combine Soulscar Mage and Chain Whirler against this deck, they're also pretty cold often as well. All their X4s become X3s, which 3 toughness is a lot worse than 4 against Chain Whirler, the science suggests, so.
Yeah, and one of the funniest things is, like, this matchup I think is really close, red-black versus mono-green, but, like, if you just go mono-red, they're just gonna wham you with giant creatures.
Right, so Unlicensed is huge, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you get access to more, you know, hard black removal if that's what you want.
It is pretty funny that they, like, that, you know, Vine Mare is the new tech, and it's just a 4-mana card that dies to Chain Whirler in an embarrassing way. They can't attack through Chain Whirler, rather.
I mean, that's one reason their green decks are starting to play more of these Blossom Defense type cards. And just to keep attacking.
Yeah.
I mean, that card's just great, but on top of that, like, this Vine Mare's, I think, pretty good in that matchup, but it's just not good against Chain Whirler on its own.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of cards in the green deck that are good in the red matchup unless they draw Chain Whirler. And that's kind of a nice thing about red right now.
Kind of true of the format.
Like, red, you'd think that there'd be a ceiling on how good Chain Whirler can be because people will just stop playing cards that Chain Whirler
owns. They're so good.
But yeah, then, like, there's Llanowar Elves in the format, and there's just, you know, nobody's going to stop playing Llanowar Elves, right? Like, that's the deck. If there's a good deck that can play Llanowar Elves, you're just... Your Chain Whirlers are always going to get value against those decks, which is really...
Well, it's just a catch for 22. Okay, yeah. So the problem with Chain Whirler, right? Let's imagine the scenario, right? Everyone's trying to next level, right? They go, look, this Chain Whirler exists, so we can't play X1s. We've got to slow down our game plan, right? So we're not going to play any X1s. You know, our cheapest cards are probably going to cost like 2 mana, and then we're going to, you know, go on top of Chain Whirler. Okay, well, if that's what you want to do, then you're playing these slower cards... And then the red deck just plays 1 and 2 drops into Chain Whirler. And, like, it's a 3-3 first strike in that scenario. And you've already taken damage from the 1 and 2 drops. And now you're just dead because you wanted to play around Chain Whirler. So it's, like, it's just such a bad design because a card like, let's look at Plague Mare, for example, which is an M19 card. It's the 2-2 that -1/-1's everything on your opponent's board when it comes into play. That card is totally reasonable because it hoses all these X1s, but it comes at the cost of being a 3-mana 2-2. It has a little bit of interesting upside of, like, can't be blocked by white creatures. So, you know, if your opponent was playing a bunch of, like, small cats or something like that, I don't know. Or there's this world that exists that you would play that card, but it's not just insane, you know? Or, like, don't give Chain Ruler first strike, or do something. I get that it costs red, 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 but you can't have these cards in, like, those types of cycles be so powerful that they're oppressive, because once they find a way into a deck, that's the only deck they can get played in, and they take up such a large part of the metagame because everyone has to deal with it because they're so powerful. Same thing with Steelleaf Champion. Like, you just put that in a deck with Land of Elves, and you just play all the green cards because you can't really put it in a different deck, but it's really strong. So, like, the top two decks, in my opinion, are this essentially mono-red deck and mono-green deck, and I think...
Yeah, and they just splash, like, 4-mana black cards and 2-mana artifacts with black activations, and that's it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, to clarify, if you're not following standard, the green deck does play a little white-black splash to bring back Scroungers and access to some sideboard cards like Duress, Hour of Glory, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Hour of Glory really shores up a lot of stuff in that deck, which is certainly a powerful addition. Some people do try splashing other colors in green. I know blue has flirted. Some people have flirted with blue in that slot for negate. But yeah, I think the black is by and large the most common color in both red and mono green. So yeah, that's red. What do you think then about just kind of mono green in the format?
I think mono green is the de facto, like, best deck. If you just, like, if you had to pick one of these decks and you wanted to just play the tournament tomorrow, you should probably just play mono green. If you haven't like played a ton of standard, it's pretty straightforward. You just play big green creatures and you smash them in your opponent's face. I think it's really good. I think I found something that is interesting and about equally powerful. So we'll talk about that more. I'm the only person on my team not playing mono green. So they all think it's really good and they have a really tuned version, but they also just, like, because I was the brewer, they've been playing it the whole time. And, like, I feel like the deck I'm going to play is really, really good. And also I've played with it so much more than mono green that, like, I feel much more comfortable with what I'm doing versus the format versus, like, mono green mirrors, which I would have to learn pretty quickly. Like, there is something to be said for having how much time you have and how practiced you are with the deck. So
there's some serious rogue deck equity as well at the Pro Tour. Like, if you're just playing a deck that is about as good as a deck that people know how to play against and nobody knows how to play against your deck, like, that is large swaths of percentage points that I don't think people really appreciate enough, like, just how much, like, if you're playing against a Platinum Pro, like, if you're playing against Owen Turtenwald or Paolo Vitor Dama de Rosa, and they know what your strategy is, they are going to make some great plays against your strategy, right? They're going to, like, their plan for how they're going to win the game is going to be well thought out, and they're going to have practiced it. And they're going to execute it, and they're going to change that plan with, you know, a lot of great predictions about what you're up to. But when you're playing something different, you get just huge amounts of you know, new deck equity. Even after they learn what's in your deck, they still don't have practice against it. And they still haven't learned all the little neat tricks about it yet. And, you know, great players will quickly pick that up. Like, if you're playing against Paolo and he's had an hour to look at your deck list and talk with somebody about it before the top eight, you know, you're going to... He's going to be pretty close to an expert against it, but still, it's a great place to be. I love that call for a Pro Tour. Okay, so let's start down this path then of how you ended up on your brew here. Why don't you tell us where you began in the process?
All right, so we were talking about, you know, what cards in M19 can actually shake up the format and, like, are powerful additions to existing strategies. And we talked about how, you know, clearly Nicol Bolas is extremely powerful. And there are cards like Volley Veteran that I even, you know, quickly looked at what are all the goblins I can play. And I was like, this deck is just worse than mono red because you lose all the powerful four drops and you don't gain that much. Although I have to say the goblins deck, I think, is pretty close. So keep an eye on that in the future. But the card I was most interested in that seemed just really powerful is Psy, Master Thopterist. Okay, so Psy, Master Thopterist, if you don't know, costs 2 and a blue for a 1/4 legendary human artificer. And it says, whenever you cast an artifact spell, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. And it has 1 and a blue, sacrifice 2 artifacts to draw a card. And so I was like, look, there's already been a bunch of artifact decks that have existed because of Dominaria combined with Kaladesh that are both just artifact-centric. So now we're adding this legend that then makes a ton of Thopters. Like, even just looking at the card, every time you just play an artifact, you get a 1-1 Thopter, which quickly adds up in cards. And if those aren't worth cards, you can just turn them into cards with the abilities. So, like, this card just looks really, really powerful. All it asks of you is to play artifacts, which is a challenge because sometimes you have to play kind of bad cards, like some bad artifacts, to make the card good. So that was my goal, was like, what's the best side deck I can make? And so the very first thing I did was I built a deck around artifacts and improvise, which was like a blue-black deck. Another card I was drawn to that has just been really powerful before that I never have quite made work but was close was Herald of Anguish. It's that a 7-mana demon that makes opponents discard, and you can fling artifacts at creatures, and it's pretty powerful. And so this deck actually was like pretty good. It played Karns, obviously, because I had a lot of artifacts, some Scythes, Heralds, like some Walking Ballistas, just like a bunch of just good cards. Makes good use of cards like Metallic Rebuke. You get to play cards like Renegade Map and Traveler's Amulet to improvise with, but those are also really, really good with Fatal Push. So this deck was pretty good. The problem was just like it was pretty fair. Like you're playing pretty expensive cards. The Heralds, you're playing artifacts, but you're not getting that many artifacts into play. So it's usually like a turn 5 play and maybe something else, or every once in a while you can get it down on turn 4. And if they just are able to disintegrate it or just attack past it, it's not that great. But the deck felt pretty powerful, and the thing I was most impressed with was Sai was really, really good in this like first shell that I brewed up. So I was like, I think there's something there. I want to keep looking at this Sai card. So that's kind of where I started.
Right, yeah, because Sai with these 1-man artifacts like Renegade Map and Treasure, or what's it, Traveler's Amulet. That's that's pretty exciting. And also that the Sai activated ability combined with Fatal Push is also pretty exciting. So
yeah, I mean the deck actually had a lot going for it. I was able to like play Sai, play a Ballista for 0, make a Thopter, sack my map with a Scrap Trawler in play, return the Ballista, make another Thopter off the Ballista, you know, sack my Metal Spinner's Puzzle Knot, return my Renegade Map, play my Renegade Map, etc., etc. So like there was like a pretty sweet Scrap Trawler engine and a bunch of sweet stuff. It was just a little too clunky, but I'm not convinced that, like, that version of the deck is not great in the future for a different metagame. So something I might return to, because Fatal Push that you can just turn on whenever you want alongside like cheap ways to get ahead is really, really good.
Did you play any Battle at the Bridge to answer cards like Hazoret or you know, Ronus?
No, I had a little bit sideboarded it, but honestly, usually when you get to that point, if you have a Herald, then it just does that anyways. So
okay, cool.
Like, yeah. So yeah, that deck was pretty good, but it was just playing a little too fair. And I was like, look, Sai is really, really good. And at this point, I tried some like just normal mono blue Reservoir lists, because I was like, Sai has to be even better. Basically, it provided fuel for improvise. And what lets you improvise? Inspiring Statuary, right? That lets you just paradoxical outcome plus Sai plus Inspiring Statuary is messed up.
Yeah, and that's a deck that I've seen even people playing with in Standard.
Yeah, it's pretty popular, and like it's been around before. We've seen this Reservoir deck be in and out of Standard all through the time Reservoir has been legal. You know, the idea is you put all these artifacts into play, and then you give all your stuff improvise with Statuary, and then the main thing you do is you play Baral's Expertise cheaper off the improvise to then put Reservoir into play. Then you play Paradoxical Outcome, return all your cheap stuff, replay it all, and kill your opponent. That all sounds great. The problem is that Reservoir is a terrible Magic card because it doesn't gain the improvise ability, so it's really expensive to just play it for 4 mana. So the card is almost useless without Baral's Expertise. And so you just already have to have both of those, plus you kind of need the Statuary to do anything.
Yeah, so we're looking now at 3 cards, each of which is pretty bad by itself.
Exactly. So it's starting to get a little bit loosey-goosey.
A little bit sketchball, yeah.
On top of that, I already talked about how some decks are just already... Some decks are playing main deck... Well, a lot of decks. A lot of decks are playing main deck of Braids and main deck Thrashing Brontodons. So,
if yeah, they the just two have... best decks have main deck Artifact Kill.
And usually the other decks have counterspells. Right. So, the deck is powerful, but it interacts in kind of awkward axis. But I did... I played just this very straightforward version of the deck, and I won a lot of games off Psy and making a bunch of Thopters. So like every game, I think I won one game with Reservoir in like maybe 10 matches, which is really bad.
Yeah, but Psy, even Psy, like Psy plus Paradoxical Outcome on your cheap artifacts, you know, yep. you're just...
And then I would put like 15 to 20 power in play and then kill them on my next turn, because that's just what the deck did, and just hope they don't chain Whirler me to death, you know? That was the plan. And then I was like, this deck's just not good enough. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. And at this point in the process, I was trying some of the other decks. So I talked about the Cats deck. I talked about Grixis Burn. This is kind of when I was working on those. So I put the deck down for a while because I was like, I like this deck. Psy is really, really good. If I can figure out a good Psy home, I'm going to come back to it. But I don't really know where to go from there because I've tried this. And I think Reservoir is just awful. So meanwhile, a few days later, Dustin Stern tweets on Twitter that he has this busted mono blue deck. And I look at it, and it's kind of exactly what I've been looking for, a reason to not have to play Reservoir as like your kill condition. And the thing he put in that I didn't really realize that you could do was he put Karn's in his deck. Because originally, Karn was kind of like a sideboard card in these blue decks. And I had it in my sideboard, and I brought it in, and it was pretty powerful, but you're really just a combo deck. The way you win is through Reservoir. So I was like, well, Karn is fine, but like it doesn't really draw you the cards you want. Tokens are cool, but it's not really your game plan. But he came up with this idea that like Psy is really strong and Karn's really strong. And the interaction of Karn with Inspiring Statuary is also extremely messed up because Karn is not an artifact. So it gains improvise. So you can play it for zero mana. And then once you play for zero mana, you can Paradoxical Outcome it back for one mana while bouncing all your zero mana artifacts. Then you replay them, and you've already made a token this turn from Karn. And then you play Karn again for zero mana, and you make another token. And so you put like 20 power into play with this combo, which is like obviously stupid.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you draw 10 cards or whatever, so.
Meanwhile, Psy is just spitting out Thopters too, making everything bigger and giving you more mana. So yeah, when this deck is going, it's really, really good. And then it plays Aether Flux Reservoir as kind of this idea that, like, well, you know, if you have Paradoxical Outcome and you're drawing a million cards, you can do that. And we were already playing Brawl's Expertise, so might as well just put into play that way and gain some life. I played the deck, and just every time I drew Reservoir, I was like, this card is horrible. It's still just awful. And I kind of fell in love with the idea of just, like, attacking my opponents with Thopters and Karns and that kind of stuff. So I kept tinkering with the deck and making it, like, more and more aggressive. So that was kind of what I was, my mindset going to this deck. Like, I was winning just so many games by attacking my opponent and so few games with Reservoir that I thought there had to be something here where I don't have to play Aetherflux Reservoir. And the advantage of not having to play Aetherflux Reservoir is you don't have to play Brawl's Expertise, which it is a good card. It's really good against mono green, but it's pretty bad against every other deck in the format. So I was like, hey, if I can avoid playing Brawl's Expertise or find a really good four drop to dump into play, then maybe it's reasonable, but I did a lot of searching and I never found an answer I was satisfied with.
Okay, so we cut the Reservoirs and we cut the Brawl's Expertise. Mm-hmm. Where did we end up then? How does the new deck look? What do we get to do differently now?
Well, so the thing is, we're already playing a bunch of size. In fact, I maxed out to four because the card's really, really good. We're already playing four Karns. And we're playing all these Ornithopters and Mox Ambers and all these types of cheap cards to combo with Paradoxical Outcome and Inspiring Statuary like I was talking about. But the key is you're playing three Mox Ambers, right? The problem is Mox Amber is great to improvise with, but it's not very good with Karn because it can't tap for mana because Karn's colorless. It only works with Psy in the deck, which when you play Psy and you play a Mox Amber, you're doing it. Life's good. But I was like, how can we make this better? What can we do? Well, we're removing these cards from the deck, so we have room to experiment with some other stuff. And I was like, well, are there any other legends that we can play, preferably cheap ones, that are going to be good in this style of deck to then make these Mox Ambers better, but then also just kind of support everything else that I'm doing? And so
Tetsuko Umezawa, comma, fugitive.
Great guess, but your thought throws are already good enough, so you don't
need
that.
Nibon, comma, Dean of Iteration.
A card combos with wizards, we're not playing wizards, and it dies to Chain Whirler.
Okay.
There's one other two mana legend.
There's another two mana legend that's blue?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
What sets it from?
It was banned in Brawl.
Brawl, comma, Chief of Compliance.
You found it.
Wow.
All right, so this is the card that I end up testing some. I tested a version of a deck where I was like, how can we max out Mox Ambers and Brawls in a way where we're getting to, like, turbo things out? Because I figured if you can ever turn on your Mox Amber early, it's obviously messed up, right? We've talked about how powerful that card is, how it can be really good in Modern. So I built a version of, like, this deck built around Legends. I had four cards, but I was like, let's put some Brawls in. So I built a deck with three Brawls and four Mox Ambers that was still kind of this paradoxical outcome combo aggro engine deck that just kind of removed the reservoirs. And was really just trying to play, like, a turn two Brawl or, like, some artifact that generates value. But when you play turn two Brawl, you can play Mox Amber. And if you have Mox Amber, it's already online. And if you have any other artifact in play, you can play Metallic Rebuke for two mana.
And then loot with Brawl?
Yes.
Bang.
And then you untap, and then you play, like, Statuary or Psy, and you just go off. So this was my thought. And it worked. The problem was I drew way too many Mox Ambers and way too many Brawls. Like, the second Brawl you draw, if you don't have a Rebuke, you're just like, I'm not doing anything right now. This is kind of lame. So I trimmed it back a little bit, was a little bit like, okay, let's have some respect for the game. We're not always just going to have this kind of stuff. So I have a version with a little bit less Brawl, a little bit less Mox Amber, but it's really, really good when you play Brawl into Mox Amber because you just get to go, you get to do really, really powerful things. And one of the most powerful things you can do in this Karn deck is when you play a turn three Karn off Statuary because you go one drop, two drop, three drop, plus zero drop, tap all four, play a Karn. And that's pretty hard to do because it's five different cards. But if you have Brawl, you can play Brawl on two. And if you don't have anything to do with your Mox Amber, you can just let it sit in your hand because Brawl looks kind of innocent. And then the next turn you play Mox Amber, land, Karn. And they're like, oh, whoops, pretty bad for me. Or you don't have something with Mox Amber, you play Psy, Mox Amber, and at that point you have two mana, and you can Metallic Rebuke from there if you need to, if that's what your plan is. So the deck has really, really explosive draws, kind of like Mono Green that I was talking about. Obviously not quite as powerful as just having Llanowar Elves, but the benefit is whenever you draw these cards later on, you just get to turn them on right away, so you don't have to wait. Which is really, really powerful. Now, I was like, okay, how can we make Mox Amber good? Let's add some legends. Great. Well, once I had 11 legends in my deck and a ton of card draw because of paradoxical outcome, I was like, I'm not playing Brawl's expertise, but what if we can upgrade it? And of course, the card I'm talking about is Karn's Temporal Sundering. Okay.
Oh my goodness. That's so good with Inspiring Statuary.
Yes. So Karn's Temporal Sundering is kind of a card that has not seen standard play, so let me describe it. It's 4BB for a legendary sorcery. So remember, you can only cast legendary sorcery if you control a legendary creature or planeswalker. We're not talking Mox Amber here. So you have to have one of your actual legends. Target player takes an extra turn after this one, return up to one target non-land permanent to its owner's hand, and then exile Karn's Temporal Sundering. So I put a couple of these in my like legend-based deck just to see how it worked out, and let me tell you, it was great. Because all those turns where you were making all those Karn tokens, you have to pass back to your opponent. But if you're like kind of comboing off and you put a ton of power into play, you can just kill them because you get an extra turn. And it also bounces like those big Galtas your opponents are playing that gives you a little bit of chance to set back. And sometimes what you do is also what you did with Brawl's expertise, but you bounce your own Prophetic Prism, takes the extra turn, get an extra Thopter offside, draw another card, maybe you draw the paradoxical outcome you need, and then you just start comboing from there. So like it just gives you some extra time. It's really, really powerful. No one plays around it because the card doesn't exist as far as people know in Standard. They're always just like thinking they have more time than they do, and like you just have a Statuary sitting in play, and then you put a Karn into play, and then you like take the extra turn, and then you're just doing it. It's just great.
Yeah, you can tell as well that that's what Wizards wanted you to do, right? Because it's Karn, and Karn's Temporal Sundering is the name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They probably didn't think it would cost two mana, but it does when you have Inspiring Statuary. So I put all this together, And that's sort of where I'm at in Standard right now. I think the deck's extremely powerful. It's kind of pretty much the deck that's been talked about with Aetherflux Reservoirs and all these other kind of things. But adding the Brawls, making your Mox Ambers better, getting faster cards, and having actual Time Walk instead of Aetherflux Reservoir is a huge upgrade, in my opinion. And having early Metallic Rebukes that then loot, because sometimes this deck you just draw a million lands, is really, really bad. That helps you. Or sometimes your land light, because you have to play 22 lands, which is just awkward, but you need spells to be able to cast. If you draw a bunch of lands, you're just not improvising. So that's where I'm at in Standard. I think, yeah, the deck's super powerful. It sometimes just has clunky stuff that I've been trying to, like, you know, fine tune, and I've been working on it for probably like 4 or 5 days now. But I have it in a spot that I think is pretty darn competitive. I can beat the top decks a reasonable amount of time. We're at least chopping, and I think I'm ahead. So I'm pretty happy with it. And it can also beat like the random control decks, because you decide you kind of play the mono blue game from RTR Theros. Yeah, you board in all these scrap heap scroungers into gates, and you just attack for three and counter their important cards. So yeah, it's really, really sweet, and I hope it's good. One card I'm really scared of is Sorceress Spyglass, because if they just name your Karn, you're kind of in a lot of trouble.
that's when you have to Karn's Temporal Sundering the Spyglass.
Yeah, there are ways around it, but it is really good, because the way this deck usually wins is it gets a Karn in play and snowballs from there, or gets a Psy in play and snowballs from there. Like, the rest of the time, you're playing some really dirtily stuff. So, yeah, that's Mono Blue Legends. As far as I know, I'm the only person that's kind of playing anything like that. I mean, it's pretty much the Mono Blue deck, but I think it is different enough that it has
a attack. Turning it from a combo deck with a, you know, mid-range backup plan to an aggro deck with a combo backup plan is definitely a huge change, even if it's only a small number of cards that have changed.
Yep.
That's really exciting. So you're going to be playing this deck at the Pro Tour unless something dramatic changes between the time of recording.
I don't think I really have enough time to switch at this point, because we have to lock the deck in 2 days, and I have just a ton of other responsibilities that I've been kind of putting off for testing. So I'm probably going to finish testing a little bit tonight. I have some sideboard plans I need to still go through to maximize. But if that goes well, I'm just going to lock it in today, because I don't have really that much more time. Yeah, and I'm pretty happy with it. The strategy was basically just not to 5-0 league with it. Obviously, people that play against me kind of get the, you know, if one person sees the Karn's Temporal Sundering, but they also might just think it's a joke deck. And
yeah, I mean, people have seen you testing
It's an alternate account, so I'm not like too worried about it and all this kind of stuff. So I didn't 5-0 with it. I 4-1'd, I think, every time I played the deck except once. Which was like 6 or 7 leagues. So, yeah, I won a lot. Won a lot with it.
The reason you don't want to 5-0 right is because you don't want the deck to show up in the deck dump, for anybody who's wondering about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm really, really glad that you've got something spicy going. I really hope you win the tournament. Normally, I really hope that Ben wins the tournament, but this time, you know, I think you've got the heart, the spirit. You deserve it, so I would like for you to win this tournament and Ben to come in second.
That sounds good.
So yeah, go ahead and do that, please, and make sure to remember.
Plus, to be fair, if we do it that way, we're both way closer to platinum.
That's true.
He has way more points than me, so I'll automatically be platinum by winning. But then, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But if he wins, it's like, you know, that's kind of rude.
Yeah, if you win, you get second, and he wins, you probably only make gold, right? And he makes platinum.
Yeah, so
that'd be
it's really
rude.
Just better for the podcast.
Better for society, you could say. all right, well, yeah, good luck, and we'll check back in next week at our regularly scheduled time, listeners, with, you know, Pro Tour post-mortem. And then the week after that will be our mailbag episode. But on the subject of kind of testing for a Pro Tour and, you know, keeping your deck secret, why don't you tell us an end story here, Neil?
All right, so this story comes from a few Grand Prix ago. I think it was GP Columbus, like a team tournament, but this is a few months ago. So anyways, as you may or may not know, Matt Nass has completely destroyed Modern with his Kart Clan Ironworks deck, and our good friend Ben was testing the deck a lot and has played it to a lot of success, and a bunch of really good pros have they all picked up Corkland Ironworks and playing it modern and winning a lot. So it was just going great. So mid-testing, one of these pros, they're just, you know, this is before the first GP that Matt wins. And they all think this deck's busted in half in modern. But of course, they don't want a 5-0 because then the list is published and people might be like, oh, really? Like, I'd heard of that deck, but that's like really 5-0? That's interesting. So they're just tearing it up in leagues, right? They're just like 4-1-ing every league. They're just feeling really good. They're like, this deck's completely broken. Like, obviously way more broken relative to the format than this mono blue deck I just talked about in standard. So everyone's just feeling great. Like, I think my mono blue deck's good, but like, I don't feel like I'm just going to win every match and it's not close. I felt that way once before in my life. And then I took down a WMCQ. This isn't quite that, but anyways, back to my story. They're just destroying KCI. They're just winning every single match except the last one that they just throw, right? Because they're like,
well, they just drop from the league at 4-0, right?
Usually that's how you want to do it. Or if you want to play for fun, you know, and get some practice against the other 4-0 deck and then drop, that's fine.
You got to be really careful though that your opponent doesn't concede. That's
Oh yeah. Usually you just drop. Uh-huh. So they're like, I really need that published. I'm going to concede as quick as possible. you start comboing and you're about to concede and they concede first. That's pretty funny. And so this pro player playing KCI, I don't remember exactly who it was. But their opponent is, you know, they're just losing at, you know, 3-0 or whatever. And they're about to just get another 4-0. And they're like, I can't believe you're playing this trash. Your deck doesn't even have any trophies. How can you play that? It's never 5-0'd before. This deck seems awful. And they're just like, okay, they take their win and they just drop from yet another league.
Oh, that is incredible.
Yep.
But that's going to be this week for us here at Allied Strategies. But we'll see you guys next week with more Allied Strategies.
Gotta go see how good Exclusion Mage is on the sideboard here.
Yeah, gotta run that.
I've been having a little problems with Mono Green lately, just because they are playing more blossoming defenses, like you were saying.
Have you tried like Baral's Expertise in the board?
Yeah, the problem is with Baral's Expertise, if you have that and like Karn's Temporal Sundering and all this other nonsense, you kind of just end up dirtling and doing nothing, and then you bounce their stuff and just you're not proactive enough, so you just die.
Interesting.
To Exclusion Mage, in theory, I haven't played it yet, but it's really good with Paradoxical Outcome because you can just keep their stuff. So I think it's going to be much better, and it's something proactive to do before they get to Galta because you can like bounce their Ronus that they played. So I think it's going to be good, but I need to do some targeted testing. My tech against Mono Red is boarding in Zaheed, Djinn of the Lamp. Which is pretty sweet.
That's just so much bigger than anything they can do.
Yeah, I know. They're always like trying to like just like chip value you and like get all this like these things in play. And you're just like Zaheed out of the sideboard, and they're like, "What the hell is that card?" So that's pretty great.
That also helps keep your Amber and your Temporal Sundering alive against a removal deck. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Time Walks are you take them out against a lot of decks, but it is spicy. And like, oftentimes you catch them unawares game one, kill them with it, and then it's no longer good. Like the only deck it's always great against is green.
But, well,
yeah, I'm pretty excited. Also, just testing has been way more enjoyable because the deck's sweet. So
yeah, this is great. This is so much better than when we do one of these episodes with Ben.
I'm gonna play this boring deck. I'm Ben White.